And this is Emily Hutchison. Today is November 3rd, 2016. I'm a student at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I'm interviewing April Rainey. This interview is taking place at the 2016 SAF National Convention in Madison, Wisconsin at the Monona Terrace Convention Center. This interview is sponsored by the Society of American Foresters and the University of Wisconsin Oral History Program and is part of the SAF Oral History Project. And will you tell me your name and spell your last name?
Yeah, my first name is April and my last name is Rainey, R-A-I-N-E-Y.
I'm going to turn the volume up a little bit. Is this better? I think so. Okay. To start off, can you tell me the story of how you became a forester?
Yes. I think the seed was probably planted when I was youngster. I grew up on a farm that had, you know, forested landscape on it, and so my brothers and I spent a lot of time playing in the woods and using our imagination to build our little mini farms and log homes, and so I spent a lot of time there and enjoyed the peace, tranquility, and the wildlife that was there. My mother took us for a lot of walks in the woods, and so it definitely started then. And you know, once I got into high school, we had a forestry program there, and I thought, definitely, I'm going to join that class, even though it's an all-male class. And I heard all sorts of bad things about what they did to women that wanted to join the class, but I said, I'm going to join, and I just decided, you know, I think I'm going to be a forester. And so I eventually worked my way through forestry school. I wanted to go to the University of Montana in Missoula, and that's where I got my degree.
Where did you grow up? Was it in Montana?
I grew up in the northwest corner of Washington State in a logging community. The town is called Deming, Washington, and we're probably only known for our log show. Beautiful area, very mountainous.
Huh. What sort of terrible things did they
do? Oh, I wouldn't say that the guys would do terrible things to you, but they didn't want women in the class. You know, where I grew up, it's logging. The logging and forestry industry is a male-dominated industry. And I actually had a wonderful teacher. His name was Mr. J. Booth. And I talked to him ahead of time, told him I was interested in joining the class. And he was my horticulture teacher, and he was a wonderful man. And he just addressed the class full of boys ahead of time and told them that I would be participating, and they were to not give me any guff. And I will say it was a lot of physical labor in this class. We did a lot of outdoor forestry programs, and we built a log home and cut down trees with axes and cut firewood and did all sorts of things. And I just jumped right in and worked right along with the guys. And I'd say I was one of the harder workers. And I think they respected that. I got along with them very well. So.
Can you tell me a little bit about your career as a forester?
Yeah, so I've had a job in forestry for about 16 years, and then, you know, an additional 3-4 years for the schooling part of it. And, you know, I started out with the Forest Service, and with the Forest Service currently, as a SCEP student. It's basically kind of like the Pathways program that they have now. It was a great program. It was an opportunity for you to go to college, and I applied for this position. It was a kind of like you would go to college, and this was kind of training ground in the summer. You'd have a job with the Forest Service in your field of interest, but while you were working that job, you were also expected to spend time working, you know, with the soil scientists, the wildlife biologists, the engineers in the roads department, the fire and fuels folks, to give you a well-rounded view of the profession of forest management and what the Forest Service does. And you know, once you got done with your college, you were not expected to, like, I went into the forestry program. That's what I got my SCEP into. SCEP But I didn't have to go into forestry. I could have gone into, you know, fire management, or maybe I could have gone into, you know, range management or something. But I really liked forestry and timber management. And so the Kootenai, which was the forest that I trained on during my college years, went ahead and hired me right out of college, which, I mean, looking back and then looking at all the struggles as I've seen students the last 15 years try to get jobs right out of college, I realize how lucky I was to get a job right out of college and get paid well. And I did have a lot of good training, cross-training. Mm-hmm. And so that was a good start. And then I had some really good mentors. The Forest Service still had a good number of folks. And when I say a good number of folks, that means, you know, we had more than one wildlife biologist on our district. We had a soil scientist on every district. We had several foresters. We had people that had been in the agency for a long time, their whole career. So I had a wealth of knowledge to tap into. And, you know, now looking back, and I'm seeing these new people coming in into the agency, and they have hardly no mentorship. Mm-hmm. And it's taking them so much longer to learn their jobs and really floundering around. And I feel so bad for them. So, you know, for my forestry career, I've had lots of good, and definitely there's been some rough times, because I really was probably the only female, well, definitely the only female forester on my district, but I would say in Region 1. I know when I attended our yearly forestry meetings, there really wasn't a lot of women prep foresters, and that's what I was, somebody that's in charge of preparing timber sales and writing contracts and marking timber and designing cruise plans and cruising the timber. It just wasn't a lot of us. So it was definitely challenging. It's was and still is a man's profession from what I can see. Mm-hmm. But still very rewarding, because I get to be outside.
Oh, yeah.
Which is what I like.
How often, what's the breakdown of, like, inside versus outside?
Well, that's kind of changed over the years, obviously. When we had, you know, 15, 16 years ago when I first started with the agency was doing a lot of projects. We were, at least on my forest, the Kootenai National Forest, we are and still are known for being a doing forest. We're a working forest. And I spent a lot of time out in the woods, and I would say, 80% of my job was in the field. And as we have lost people and have not had any money to rehire, I think the direction of the Forest Service has definitely changed. The amount of litigation is just, seems like it's doubled. It's just gotten worse. The more time, we're spending more time trying to bulletproof our EISs and EAs, so that means more time in the office, less time out in the field, which is also taking away from us being able to start on other projects, because we are spending years trying to get these projects as perfect as we can. They're never going to be perfect, because in essence, most of our projects do go to court. Hmm. So, we've definitely, I would say, I'm spending less time in the field than I was. But now I do have a new job. I'm a timber sale administrator. So I would say, compared to prep, timber prep, it just depends. When logging ramps up and we're really busy, I'm in the field 4 or 5 days a week, you know, all through the winter. Summer and fall, probably spring breakup, which in Montana is generally starts around the end of February and goes through May sometime. So the logging end of it kind of shuts down. Hmm. But then, you know, then I'll go help other shops. You know, we have prescribed fire. Maybe I'll help wildlife or something like that.
Hmm. And how do you spell Kootenai?
Kootenai is K-O-O-T-E-N-A-I. Named after the Kootenai Indians.
Oh. Spelled it wrong. And then SCEP is, how do you spell that?
Well, that's S-C-E-P. And I know the S stands for student, and I think C is career. Student career. E, I don't know.
Experience?
And experience program, something like that.
Okay, that's close.
It was a great program.
And that's similar to, or is that now what Pathways is?
Well, Pathways has changed a bit, but I believe it's kind of along the same idea.
Okay. How have you been involved with the Society of American Foresters?
Okay, I've been involved with SAF basically since I first started going to college for forestry, and I went and got my associate's degree at Flathead Community College in Kalispell, Montana, and Dr. Jay Booth introduced me to SAF, and he says, you know, we have these monthly meetings and we have a committee here in Kalispell. You really need to see about joining. So I did. I started attending meetings, and I've been an SAF member ever since. Do you want me to talk about my leadership involvement with SAF?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so the things that I like and I'm very passionate about with SAF is that SAF has provided a lot of up-to-date, science-based information, studies, training that I don't always feel like I've gotten a lot of that within my job. I used to when we had more people and more funding in the Forest Service. So, and it's an opportunity for me to get out and network with academia, state foresters, different government agencies, BIA, BLM, and also, you know, like the Weyerhaeusers and the Plum Creek foresters, and to just listen to see what their concerns are, what things are working for them. So just having that network interface has been really good, and to see so many people that really have a passion for what they do. That's what I've seen about SAF members. If you're an SAF member and you're in SAF for a long time, and especially if you're involved in a leadership role or helping to organize a convention or a state meeting, there's generally a real passion there for what you do, and I don't always see that in the workplace. So it's really a nice eye-opener. So yeah, I've had a leadership positions on my local, as the chair and the vice chair for my local chapter. So,
Can I ask you about your work at the Kootenai Forest, and is the breakdown of general employees the same as it was in?
Which question are we on?
I'm thinking about number two on the follow-ups to your career as a forester. Does it still feel like it's mostly men in the office or in the?
Okay, with where I work.
Yeah.
Well, no. If you look at my forest as a whole, there is definitely a few more women. One of those women worked for me. I worked with a gentleman named Lawrence Smith, and he actually hired Jody Turk as a seasonal, and we worked together, and then I kind of supervised her, and she's been a great candidate, and she's come up through the forestry program and the prep side of it. Now, she doesn't have a forestry degree, but she's excellent. She's stayed in the prep side. She's finally gotten a permanent job and with the Forest Service on our forest. I've also seen, she is the other woman prep forester on the Kootenai. There's only one now. So I was the only prep forester, and then when I became the sale administrator, there were none, and then she became a GS7 prep, like small sales forester. So she's the only one, and we manage 2.1 million acres on the Kootenai. And one thing I will say is we do have two women TMAs. They'd be timber management staff officers. Mm-hmm. So that's new. We had one woman before that. Her name was Pat. She did a great job. So we have two women staff officers that are in timber. And we have two women sale administrators, where we used to just have one. So there's still not a lot of women in timber. And even when I go to the regional meetings, which I just went to last year, I think I maybe only saw one or two. So still not a lot in the timber prep. I see civiculturists, women civiculturists. Like on my district, when we had three civiculturists, they were all women. And if you look at our forest now with four districts, we've got three women civiculturists, maybe four, and a man. So it's been typically women in that area. Kind of a 50-50 split, I would say.
Okay, so now going on to number four.
Mm-hmm.
How has your ethnicity, cultural background, or gender influenced your career as a forester?
Well, I hope my ethnicity hasn't. I hope people aren't looking at my ethnic background. Hair color, any of that. I'd like to think not. My gender, I definitely would say, is definitely, let's see. Well, I think it's had an impact. I can't say that it was a welcoming one early on, just because I was, you know, when I was hired, I was 24, 25, and I worked with four men that were between 20 and 25 years older than me. And some of them were pretty nice. Others, I really got the impression they didn't really feel I belonged here, you know. And they were, pardon my term, asses. But that just made me persevere. They weren't going to break me down. So, you know, at first I didn't really see that there was any barriers, my gender. Then as I was in the profession longer, and I think they realized I was going to stay around, you know, I started seeing these things. And, you know, I have to work with private industrial foresters from Weyerhaeuser and Plum Creek. And I've definitely seen, they don't have any women foresters. They did have one, and they really did put her through, the ringer, but she was a tough gal. She really was, and I really admire her. But I think it's just a stigma that, you know, even though we're in 2016 and things have changed, you know, you've got to realize a lot of these people that I'm working with in the forestry sector they've been doing this a long time. I'm still considered kind of young. And they just come from that stigma where they didn't work with a lot of women, even my loggers. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no women loggers out there where I'm working. I know there's some women truck drivers. It's just something that we've had to deal with. But I would say, you know, they watch you. If they see you're a hard worker and you get right out there with them, eventually I found that they come around and they do respect you. Yeah, but you just got to keep working hard and not think that you're exempt because it's raining outside and you're a woman and it's cold. Nope.
Do you think that growing up in a logging town, certainly it shaped your experience, mm-hmm. but maybe what does the question say? So in terms of regional experiences?
Mm-hmm. So basically, I think what you're asking is, you know, basically, where I grew up, has it affected me in my career, maybe, is the question,
yeah,
sort
yeah,
of, or influenced me
yeah.
in some way? Oh, definitely. Gosh. Maybe it's not on a daily basis, but because I did grow up in a logging community, you know, parts or of my family members would go logging, because I grew up on a dairy farm and a beef farm. you know, if beef prices went down or the dairy industry went through some tough times, you know, the family would go off and go logging for a while. So, you know, we were all kind of very close in that community. And there was definitely things that I saw growing up. I thought, gosh, I don't want to have to deal with that. But I guess I would say the way we log on the coast and the way we log in Montana is very different, because where I grew up is mostly private industrial lands, and it's even age management, clear cut it. That's what they do. And I never really liked that. Just now, remember, when I was young, I didn't really know anything about forestry. I just know that, you know, it looked like a lawnmower went over the whole hillside and took everything off. And, you know, of course it grew back, but they cut over large swaths of land. And it wasn't that it bothered me that they cut the trees, because, you know, I grew up in a farming family and we plowed our lands and cut the hay. I was used to using natural resources. It just seemed like it was a huge impact in an area. And it was very visual. So that's one of the things in my daily job that I think about working for the Forest Service, and this is one of the good things. I look at the work that we do when we do cuts. We are thinking early on the size, the shape, what kind of treatment we're going to do, and it isn't just for logs. You know, we're thinking about soil, we're thinking about edge effect and visuals, we're thinking about access, you know, recreation, and wildlife. Wildlife plays a huge part in that, and I'm just always thinking about how it just wasn't that way growing up, and even when I go back home to visit, they're still taking the lawnmower on the hillsides. And so, yeah, and then just one of the other things that I really like about the loggers that I work with, in Montana, they really seem pretty educated. Like, a lot of my loggers are involved in Montana Logging Association. Safety is very important to them. You know, when they get out of their equipment, you know, they don't look like they're so much at work. I mean, they're wearing their Carhartts and their nice shirt, but they're kind of tidy looking. Where the guys, you know, when I come from the coast, I mean, they are rough looking. You know, clothes are torn and ragged. They're all greasy. Most of them chew. That's just par for the course. But a lot of drugs, lots of drinking. And it's different in Montana. Not that we don't have those problems, but I think because maybe we just, you know, if you're a bad logger, you don't do a good job, you're not going to be around very long. And so it's actually pretty competitive. And you just can't afford to be sloppy and not have a good safety record and not take care of your equipment. Because all those things, I mean, if you're not taking care of yourself very well, you're probably not taking care of your equipment. If you're not taking care of your equipment, you're generally not doing a very good job out on the ground. I've seen that. I've had experiences with that. So definitely, past, definitely I can relate that to what I'm doing every day, and it's actually quite a contrast.
That's interesting. Okay, moving on to number five.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts about diversity and inclusion in the forestry profession?
Okay, well, I know, like, with the agency that I work for, they're really, really push diversity. You know, trying to encourage us to hire people that are handicapped, people of different races and ethnicity, you know, don't let weight be an issue, the whole gender thing I'm not going to get into. In the region that I'm in northwest Montana, we have tried to kind of reach out to get different ethnic groups, whether it be black people or Mexicans or whoever, to apply for jobs so we can show that we have some diversity. But I will say, you know, we have had a few black people come to work on our forest. We had a East Indian come to work, a girl that rented from me. She was a Mexican girl from California, very smart, did a really good job. But she felt really awkward. She said, "Oh my gosh, April, I might be one of the only few Mexicans here." And I said, "Well, no, there's a few others." I said, "Just smile and be positive and don't worry about what people think," mm-hmm. you know. But it really bothered her. Now, we've hired some black folks on the fire crew. They fit right in. I don't know of anybody that's given them any kind of a hard time. But I do recall the gentleman from East India, you know, it really bothered him, and he actually left because there were no East Indians there.
Yeah.
And it isn't that we don't welcome them. It's just, it's a very different dynamic, the North. It's very different from the South, you know. People that, you know, you find a lot of black people in the South, and I've seen even a lot here. It's just different culture where we're at, and I don't think you can expect to take people from one culture and put them into another one. And believe me, it is different. If you go to Northwest Montana, even if you were to go across the border two states to Northwest Washington, the people there are different in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask me if I want to go back to Northwest Washington, heck no. No, I like where I'm at for good reasons. So I think we have tried, the agency has, and it's, I think, very much in the forefront, an emphasis for them. I can't speak for private or state. I just don't know. I know, like the warehouser who's now taken over the private land that Plum Creek did have, you know, they're all white male foresters. The state, DNRC, Department of Natural Resources, all white male foresters. I don't know. Did it just happen that way? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
So that's. I think diversity is important.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one thing. That's another thing that I get from SAF when I come out to these conventions is you see all shapes and sizes, all different colors and groups of people, whether it's academia or private forest or federal, and it's just really good to get us all together and hear those ideas. So,
mm-hmm. Would the programs like SCEP and Now Pathways,
mm-hmm.
does that bring people in from the area generally? So, because you went to school
at the university,
right.
And I would say that most of those programs kind of targeted the college students,
mm-hmm.
and so, like, in the surrounding area, when you say the area, I'm assuming that you're talking about maybe the Kootenai or the county
right.
that I'm
yeah.
from.
Mm-hmm.
We actually, it's kind of disappointing to me that our forest has had a few, some pathways programs. Our district really hasn't done a whole lot to reach out and do a pathways program. I'm kind of disappointed in that, and I think that has more to do with the leadership.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't typically hire local people through a pathways program. It's generally they're going to college or they've got a degree already.
Okay.
And that's kind of where it stems from.
Moving to number six. Right? Yeah.
Yep.
What role can SAF play in enhancing diversity and inclusion?
Okay, well, that's a little bit of a broader question. I don't know if you're talking about enhancing diversity in my area. I think SAF does an excellent job already
mm-hmm.
of encouraging diversity. I mean, from all different kinds of students, and I think targeting the students, people when they're young, bringing them on. I mean, I don't see SAF putting up any blinders to women, to black people, to Native American. I mean, I've been on a number of these conventions and their tours. I mean, we visit private lands, Native American lands. When I was in, I think it was South Carolina, Charleston, we went and visited a bunch of, you know, there was they actually used to be owned by white people. They were slaves, their descendants, and they now acquired all this land and were forest managers. So I think SAF has done a really good job. I say keep doing what they're doing.
So in comparison, I'm going to look at the follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
What about the role of other institutions, like universities or the U.S. Forest Service? And maybe here, do you want to talk about state versus federal? Or?
Well, and, you know, I hate to say, well, the state should be doing this or that. I would say that the state, like the state of Montana, there's probably something amiss because I do go to the state meetings, the Society of American Foresters state meetings, and we do have quite a number of state employees that attend. And, you know, I actually know that many of those state employees are people that I went to university with, or they either graduated before me or after me. So when we talk about diversity, they've come from, obviously we are all from a very different backgrounds. Our backgrounds are all very different. So there is that diversity. If you're talking about diversity in color and ethnicity, I would say the state is at least lacking in their forestry program. But, you know, that's just what I'm seeing kind of in a snapshot. I want to be careful about judging them because I don't work for them because I really like working with them. They're a great bunch of people. But I guess if I were to compare them to, you know, the people that I have, you know, we have in our office, I mean, we've got handicapped people, you know, we've got people with disabilities that aren't, you know, we've got veterans because we kind of have a precedent, you know, a calling to hire veterans. So there's a lot of different things when I look at the Forest Service, reasons why people got jobs or it contributed to why they got the job. And I would say I just spoke with my state forester, or the guy, the forester that I work with. His name's Jeremy Rank, and you know, I never hear these kind of discussions come up with him. So I think that maybe they don't have as strong emphasis as we do.
Hmm. Do the veterans, are they originally from near Montana or?
No. In fact, we've got several vets. And most of them are not originally from Montana. They moved into the area. I do want to say something about diversity. I think it's definitely something that's important that we need to try and set a goal towards. But what I have seen in the Forest Service is we make that as kind of one of the main objectives for hiring people. And I have actually heard this. I have heard leadership say, well, we really need to get somebody, a person of color in here. You know, we need to do something. You know, this person has a disability and we really need to pick them up. And to give you a few examples, these people that have these disabilities were not performing. They were not doing a good job. They were basically seasonal employees and they weren't getting good recommendations from the Forest Service people that had supervised them. And basically, I know on our district, we were forced to hire somebody to basically fulfill that diversity block. You know, another thing is, you know, this is a sensitive topic, but weight, someone's weight. You know, I've seen some where, you know, we get into those situations where you can't judge people on their weight per se, but we have some that are pretty good size, and it has a negative effect on the rest of us, I guess I would say. Here's an example. When we work together on planning teams, we go to the field. We go to the field as a planning team, and we meet with the public, and it's important for all members to be involved. Well, we have one individual that is too big. They won't or can't go on these field trips. So that's the negative side of diversity, that in the Forest Service it has, we've picked up people based on gender, based on sex, because we had to fill in a slot, and that's not been good.
Okay, moving on to number 7. Where do you see the profession of forestry going in the next 20 years?
Okay, well, this is what I envision, because I want to have a positive attitude. I think forestry is like the, it's the diamond that people haven't found, or only some of us have recognized. I've done a lot of traveling around the world. We have a huge population worldwide. Those people all use resources. A good part of the resources that everybody's using right now is non-renewable resources. Trees are a renewable resource. And, you know, I've wondered for many, many years, especially being a federal government employee, why the federal government isn't doing a better job of maybe spearheading this. You know, we really do look to the government to be leaders, or to cultivate people below them to take these initiatives forward. And I see the forest products industry being a huge part of the future, because it is a renewable, recyclable, biodegradable product. Mm-hmm. That's actually pretty dang clean if you were to go out in the woods and you're to watch the logging operation from stump to the mill. It's a pretty dang clean operation, way cleaner than if you look at what's going on in mining. And the impact over time compared to oil and gas drilling, mining, those kinds of things. And why we have been so slow to embrace it, and actually we've poo-pooed it. You know, oh my gosh, cut a tree? Heavens. You know, I'm really excited. I went to the Forest Products Lab tour yesterday, you know, and it was very interesting to see all the things that they had studied over their 100-year history. And the new thing, obviously, that I was very excited about is the whole thing on nanoplastics, because it just kills me. The amount of plastic that we use and generate, and it might be recyclable, but it's really not very biodegradable. Mm-hmm. And I'm very excited about that. So I think there is endless potential for forestry. Whether or not I think private industry folks and the states are going to capitalize on that, I hope to see the Forest Service get smart and be a big player. And I'm going to ask, if I get a chance to ask the chief at the Breakfast with the Leaders, that's one of the questions I'm going to ask him.
Cool. Did you travel with the Forest Service?
I pay my own way. I don't really think the Forest Service, at least, how would I say this? My boss is supportive of me being involved in this, but I don't really think he wants to spend a lot of money on this. So I paid my lodging, the registration, and my flight. He's paying me my O1 time, my daily rate for this. I asked him if he would. So no, I don't get any compensation from the Forest Service.
And then when you said you traveled the world,
I travel a lot my own dime, because I love to travel. Mm. So
yeah, I was wondering if the U.S. Forest Service had any.
Nope.
International.
Nope. Heck, we can't even hardly hire people. They're certainly not going to pay for me to travel.
Okay. Let's see how we're doing. Are any of these 5 questions? Oh, I don't know if you've had a chance to look at them.
Well, go ahead.
Maybe we'll just do one or two, and I wondered.
Is there way on the back page?
Yeah, on the back page. I wondered if any one of them, like the most rewarding aspects of your career, or maybe how the forestry profession has changed, or the biggest challenges.
Okay, do you want me to just answer one of these?
Yeah, I don't know if any of those speak to you.
Okay, let me check on this real quickly. Well, we've covered some of these already, so I don't want to recover them. So if I might just answer both of these. One of these I could answer really quickly, if I can.
Sure, yeah.
Number two is, what has been the most rewarding aspect of your career? And I think probably one of the biggest rewards for me, despite all the hurdles working for the federal government, you know, just because of the litigation that we go through and the tremendous amount of rules that, you know, because we don't always speak to the other groups over here, there's a lot of red tape in the federal government, and it does really stymie things. But the end goal is to do a good job, to try and leave a light footprint on the ground, but still, you know, do projects and work with nature for the benefit of many resources, people, the wildlife, water, all those good things. And I'm really, anytime we do projects, I really think we do a really good job. Like, I would have no problem putting my name, hey, I worked on this project, I'm proud of it. Because we think about, like I said, soil, water resources, roads, wildlife, we care about the aesthetics, the long-term impact that those treatments are going to have. It's not all about the dollar. So that's, for me, very rewarding. And just being able to be in the woods is pretty damn awesome. So I guess number five, what I would say, what advice would I give a student or a new forester just starting off? And I heard it today in some of the plenary sessions. And I think in a lot of ways, forest management has been under attack for a long time. And foresters are terrible communicators. I liken them to dairy farmers and farmers, because farmers have the same problem. Farmers like to work in the field. They don't necessarily like to integrate with a lot of other farmers unless it's for beer drinking or something at the end of the day. And unfortunately, it's had some negative repercussions on them, because they all have the same problems, but they don't come together and then stand together as a voice. And, you know, we've been dealing with, the issues of, there's all different kinds of things involved in forest management, as we've talked about today. But I still think that there's a stigma from people that do not live in forested areas, that are mostly living in urban areas, that it's bad to manage the forest. And I don't think we've done a good job of educating people about how much of the resources that they use every day come from the woods. And I would encourage anybody coming into this profession to get involved. If you're not good about getting up and speaking in front of people, then do something else. You know, you can be in the background, helping, communicate, network, however, whatever. But get involved as a forester and be involved in Society of American Foresters, and don't sit on the wayside and be part of the problem. It's not getting us anywhere. So that's what I would say to
that's
them.
That's good advice. Just a quick follow-up to your first bit about the projects that you're proud of.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have one in mind? Just a brief description, or one that was very successful?
Gosh, we've had a lot of them. I've got a couple of big projects right now that I would love to say I'm really proud of, but we haven't even been able to start doing much logging because they're tied up. One's in the Ninth Circuit and the other one's at the local court with Judge Malloy. But I don't know, I guess I'll use maybe Bristow. Bristow was my very first project as a forester, where I was learning a lot, and I wasn't always sure I knew what I was doing or why. But, you know, it's been 15 years, and that sale actually drug on for a long time. It was purchased by a private individual. He was a good logger, And just the last couple years, we've been prescribed burning the last of the units that got finished. And I remember working in those units before they had been logged. And these units actually had never been logged. The last disturbance they had was a stand replacing fire. And they were thick, I mean dog hair thick, with small cedar, some bigger cedar, small larch trees, some bigger larch trees. It was hard to get through these stands. Lots of downed and dying and dead trees, lots of standing dead. They were just really bad stands. And it was so cool. We went back. They had been logged, and we burned them last fall. And there was an adjacent unit that we had burned a couple of years prior. And then there was an adjacent area that had not been treated at all, that looked like the stand before we'd done any treatment. And I'm telling you, it was amazing. The biota that was growing there, the wild raspberry, the huckleberry bushes, the mount ash, all the flowers. It was incredible. And then I look at the untreated stand that didn't have anything growing in the understory, was really hard to move through. And you know, that's an example of diversity. It's providing homes and habitat for certain kinds of animals, but we have vast landscapes of that, and it was just amazing. It was like somebody turned the light on. It was cool.
Yeah, that sounds good.
And I said the silviculturist did the right thing here.
Okay, great. Then to conclude, is there anything else you'd like to add about forestry, the SAF, or diversity that we didn't cover?
No, I think I'm good.
Okay. And then finally, so they've asked me to ask you some demographic questions.
Mm-hmm.
What year were you born?
1975.
And what is your gender, or what do you identify as?
I'm a girl. Is that?
Yeah, that's,
what?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
What is your ethnic, racial, or cultural background?
I'm just a white person. My family immigrated from Europe.
And thank you for your participation in this project. We have your contact information, and we'll let you know when the interviews are compiled and can send you copies of the interview recordings if you're interested.
Okay.